from my apartment. It's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's a guy who hates slime more than Aurora hates word puzzles. I am Rob's sister Nina. Hello, everybody. And welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. And here we are, our final feedback show of the season. And we have a good one because we are very excited to have back here with us, and we've done this many seasons now in a row for the final feedback show of the season. He is just back from paternity leave, as that he is a new dad here, and hopefully will not have slime at his house for many years. Please give it up for Mr. Mike Bloom.
I don't know if you remember changing newborns' diapers, Rob, but there is a lot of slime involved.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The viscosity is very close to it. So we're not exactly, you know, running it all over kids' hands, but it's a texture that I've been used to in the past week.
Okay. All right. That got real. That got graphic. And anyway, Mike, welcome back to the Survivor Feedback Show. Happy 1 week birthday to young Asher Bloom.
Thank you very much. Yes, Asher James Bloom. He was supposed to be due on May 14th, the day before the Edge of Extinction finale. But from what I'm thinking, when last Saturday, May 4th happened, you know, it was Free Comic Book Day. It was the Kentucky Derby, where a horse like pulled a Ben Browning and got disqualified for nudging another horse. And it's, of course, Star Wars Day. So he said, you know what, let's add another dot to that bulleted list. And he came out a bit early, but it's been absolutely fantastic. And I just want to say at the top, I want to thank everyone profusely for all the well wishes. It has been such an up and down experience, like a roller coaster ride at Disney World, as Gavin would allude to. If people want to wonder how fatherhood, or if fatherhood, has profoundly affected me, don't worry. Within the first few minutes of meeting my child in the nursery, my pants did accidentally fall down. So it's safe to say.
Wait, yeah. What do you mean your pants fell down?
All right, so let me I should probably back up and
explain
this.
Is that
like
one of your things?
I don't know if that's a trademark Mike Bloom thing, but apparently, so my wife ended up having an emergency C-section. I won't go into the details too much, but she is such an amazingly strong woman and such a trooper. Give Angela Bloom a shout out if you can out there. As such, I had to be put in medical scrubs and very quick. So I was just given this set of blue clothes, not given much instructions. And the pants, I'd say they were akin to that of something that might be worn by like a surgical clown. These are extra, extra, extra large pants, and I didn't know exactly what the etiquette was behind this. So I just said, all right, I guess I'll put these on. Then I get ushered away into the operating room as they're about to do it. The doctors are admonishing me, saying, like, please tighten your pants, sir. There was no time. There was about to be a life being brought into this world. And so obviously my mind was concentrated elsewhere. We're in the nursery. I'm looking at this beautiful child, you know, that this product, this new member of my family, thinking through all the thoughts that have been running through my head in the past year or so. And one of the nurses just sort of casually points out, like, I think your pants are on the ground. And sure enough, I did not tie the pants closely enough. So I am standing there. I mean, not nearly as naked as my child, but certainly, you know, further, not as far removed from it. And so I think it's only adequate.
Not
that
the
Asher
first
Bloom,
time, though, right?
I, on the other hand, was a man whore.
Yeah, exactly. It was very much, I guess, the full circle effect between the conception and birth of Asher James Bloom. So I think it's only adequate that he gets his first impression of his father as just a big old doof. I'm a daddy doof from now on, Rob.
Yeah, boy, this is like an episode of Ryan's Toy Review.
Is it?
No, not that. No. Everybody keeps their pants on, but
is that the tagline? Yeah. Ryan's Toy Review, don't worry. Everyone keeps their pants on.
Yeah, a lot of jokes at the expense of poor Ryan's dad. But anyway, Mike, happily, you didn't get arrested.
Yes, that's certainly good that I was not brought out of the hospital in handcuffs. And we quickly alleviated the wardrobe situation. And honestly, considering how high my anxiety was riding, I think we sort of needed something to break the ice, even though it was an XXL size of surgical pants. And the nurses and I had a grand old time about it. I was laughing all the way to the bank, and it certainly helped, I guess, bring the mood down for me from all the high stakes tensions and make me realize, okay, you know what? We have ceased one stage of life, and now we are moving into the next one. It's very much a pre-merge into post-merge version of life.
Boy, I've never heard childbirth described as that.
Yeah, I guess I'm really taking a page out of David and Aubrey's books, the books of metaphors about Survivor, and just applying them to the most basic life events.
I'd like to hear Angela describe it as childbirth is like post-merge.
Yeah, you eat a lot.
All right. Well, Mike, what a great week we have here on the podcast. Of course, excited to have you here, but also coming off the heels of one of the really memorable podcasts in recent memory of the Christian Hubicki real deep dive into the season. 3+ hours with Christian Hubicki this week.
Yeah, an Avengers Endgame length podcast with Christian Hubicki. I mean, I love it. Sometimes, Rob, you go with the theme. Apparently, this theme week ended up being fast-talking, gregarious nerds, because Christian and I have to be a double feature here. But, I mean, he's delightful to listen to. I think we might need to do something with, not to supplant myself into Jordan Kalish's position, but we might need, like, a new final boss in the Twitch quiz to bring him on, because God, like, he could put, like, Paul Osselson a run for his money in terms of remembering so many minute details about Survivor seasons through the years. It's truly fascinating.
Okay. Boy, that would be somebody to put on the Twitch bucket list. Of course, Twitch still to come with your co-host for international Survivor coverage kicking off next week, Shannon Gates. So be on the lookout for that. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. All right. Mike, I guess so. Let's pick things up now. And,
much like my pants.
Much like Mike's pants. And we are our top story at this hour.
Dun, 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 dun.
Rick Devens continues his march towards the Survivor endgame with a really strong showing this week, wins immunity, and holds the hidden immunity idol heading into the newly constituted Final Six once somebody comes back from the edge of extinction. And so I think that it's only customary that we start with Devin's watch.
Yeah, I mean, considering that the past two episodes have been Devin's watch, I mean, this has been such a weird season of Survivor, Rob. And I don't want to get the connotations mixed up here. Weird does not mean wrong, in my opinion. In fact, you know, I'd sort of coined this the trademark train wreck season a couple of weeks ago, with all of these big characters really getting taken out in such crazy ways, one by one by one. You know, when we were comparing the Survivor to the pinball game last week via Jeff Probst, it does kind of feel like the past couple of weeks, at least from a storytelling perspective, we have sort of tilted the table in Rick Devin's favor, and this episode was no different.
Okay. Mike, where are you coming down on all things Rick Devens heading into the finale?
It's really tough because, you know, you have certainly talked about it last week, and I feel like we have to again talk about it this week, breaking down what Rick Devens means to the Survivor fandom, because I really do feel like it's a lot more nuanced than you can really grasp by attributing one sort of viewpoint or the other to it, because I feel like there are people who do not like Rick Devens as a person. Certainly, that happens with every Survivor contestant. They feel he's too gregarious. They feel he's too hammy with the news time confessionals, that he's too braggadocious. There are people who are fine with him, but dislike the way he's playing the game, in that Survivor's a game of social strategy, and going around finding idols by yourself is not exactly, it's an antisocial strategy, as much as of a big part of the game as it has become, which we've seen in previous seasons as well, dictate the end game. What I find so interesting about Rick Devens is that this is one of the first times I can remember where essentially the jury is kind of being sold a bill of goods, and we know it as well as the other players. I think that's where a lot of the pushback is coming from as well. And we can certainly talk about the idols of it all, because I think there is some pushback there as well in terms of a people questioning maybe the legitimacy of that as a gameplay style. But I just think it's so interesting that, you know, we do have such a big showing from Rick Devens at Tribal Council. He puts on these major performances. And the fact of the matter is, we sort of know it's BS. And everyone else sitting there next to him know it's sort of BS, but the jury, as far as we're concerned, are totally lapping it up. I know I'm making this a reference 2 weeks in a row, but it's very much like Tartuffe, this French play where a man gets invited as like a house guest, and he acts completely boorish to everyone in the household except his friend, who just cannot see past that facade and just sees him as this fantastically nice guy. And I know you and Christian sort of talked through ways as to how you sort of get the jury on your side, sort of win favor away from Rick Devens. But it is, storytelling this season has been so startling to me. And I think one of them is that we are seeing him be able to, you made the Inspector Gadget reference a couple of weeks ago, and I think it really shows that he's like, great job, Devens. This was all your doing, when really this was all the doings of several people working behind the scenes and not really mentioning it or being as forthcoming about it as they might be with other moves.
Right. I also think that it's a little more complicated with that, because I don't think it's necessarily just the jury, but I think that to a lot of the viewers of the show, it's also coming across that way. That I think it was not really laid out in the episode, and I think that some of the people who have been, you know, following this show regularly can, you know, jump to the conclusion, okay, I Rick probably didn't change anybody's mind at the Tribal Council, but the show certainly didn't clear up whether or not that was the case. We're just deducing that was the case. So I think a majority of the viewers are thinking that, you know, Rick's demonstrations at Tribal Council are also having this really positive effect in what's happening.
I would agree with that as well, and I think maybe that buys into that typical Survivor editing adage, and I know that we have made things more unconventional in recent seasons, but it still holds that the way they typically like to do things is they like to keep Tribal Council a relative surprise, because they don't want to go through 10 minutes of question and answer where you know what's going to happen, essentially. And so, like you said, and just like last week, there probably was a session where all these people got together and said, okay, yeah, we're going to get rid of Aurora this week, but of course they wouldn't show that, because they want to either turn a narrative that Rick had changed their mind at Tribal Council. We even get a couple shots of when Rick makes this big bluff declaration. You have Gavin saying, oh, I'm nervous, and Lauren saying, oh, well, I'm feeling a lot less confident than I did before, which might be them sort of pulling their own BS as well. But they really were trying to build it up like, okay, anybody can go at this point. And that's unfortunately, I think, to the expense of things that might have happened behind the scenes that are not immediately prevalent to both the viewers and the jury as well, who again look at things at face value and see, oh, it looks like Rick was able to pull one over on them, not helped by the fact that Aurora pretty much hammered that point home as she got up to leave.
Yeah, she said, hey, it's reverse psychology.
Is it reverse psychology, though?
No, I don't think so. I definitely don't think that that was the case.
I think it's just, I don't know, intimidation. That's probably what I would, I mean, I guess, what would reverse psychology be like? Hey, vote for Julie because I'm not going to play an idol on her? Like, I'm trying to figure out exactly what the exact opposite of what Rick wanted to do.
Well, I guess it was reverse psychology. He said, I'm going to play my idol on Julie. I'm going to save Julie. I'm going to save Julie. And then he didn't. So I guess it could be technically reverse psychology, according to Aurora.
How do you fall for reverse psychology?
It's a good question. It's a good question. I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I don't know. Aurora also, you know, comes from that realm of conflict resolution. So maybe she has a better definition of reverse psychology. Maybe she's more used to people using reverse psychology to get what they want. And so she was just exasperated at people actually falling
yes.
for that.
I love exasperated Aurora, because
yes.
I think that exasperated Aurora, I'm not sure why she hasn't become a even more popular figure in this season, because I feel like that she really is the voice of all of the discontent Survivor fans as she's discussing Rick Devens in this episode.
Rick winning immunity sucks. I feel as though He is just that thorn in my side, which will not go away.
Well, to answer your question, I think one reason is that it took us legitimately a month and a half to know who Aurora was. There's a little bit of Johnny come lately, but I mean, the thing that I love about Aurora is that it really feels like in recent weeks, that personality that I know I was super high on with the preseason, with Josh's interview, has finally come out. I mean, not only does she hate Rick Devins, she hates many elements of Survivor, it seems. We have, you know, we have word puzzles, we have basketball, we have Rick Devins, we have several other types
of puzzles. Soccer moms.
Basically, it's like the anti-My Favorite Things list from The Sound of Music. If Aurora sang it, it would be very different.
Aurora hates all sorts of things, we'll explore them. But yeah, most of all, she hates when Rick Devins has idols. She'll go through his bag. She'll do anything to stop Rick Devins from having immunity.
Yeah, what I really love about Aurora is that, you know, I know you and Christian sort of talked about, like, what could Aurora have done to save herself? Maybe she could have joined up with Rick and Julie. But as Rick says in his voting confessional, you know, one of the reasons why he voted for her is because he says, you know, you are someone who just wouldn't, you are a cool girl who refuses to work with me. And that's what it comes down to. Aurora was the most anti-Rick person in this entire cast.
She was a Devins.
She was a Never Devins. And I think that unfortunately screwed her. Like, again, on paper or on parchment, could have been great to have her join up with Julie and Rick, considering that she was getting targeted by her allies without her knowing it. But she's never going to work with Rick in any way, shape, or form, because she can't pull that thorn out of her side. You don't work with the thorn. You try to remove the thorn.
Okay. Let me play a voicemail for you, Mike. And this is from Josh Spalding, who has a part of this Devins debate, which has kind of gotten lost. Let's hear from Josh Spalding.
Hey, Robbio. Josh Spalding calling from New Hampshire. I want to start by saying I like Rick Devins. I find him very entertaining. And as Josh Wigler said on last week's Wiggle Room, he's a great narrator, but the Survivor fan in me is just, I don't know, worried, I guess. Worried about a Devins win. I don't know that I can stomach someone who got voted out of the game, winning the game, as much as I like the guy. So I'm just curious, oh, great Survivor Oracle, what is your opinion on this? What do you think about that? Is that an issue? So anyways, love the show. Thanks for all the great work you guys do. See ya.
Wow, Mike, great Survivor Oracle. Did he call James Miller by accident?
Mike, it seems like that nobody's even talking about the fact that Rick Devins was at one point actually voted out of this game.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about, and I think it's because in previous seasons where this has become a thing, with the exception of Burton and Lil, we've sort of seen the revolving door effect, right? And I feel like that was brought into effect by Boston Rob of, you know what, they're sort of a wild card, let's get rid of them. We've been playing our own game out of sight, out of mind. I mean, I am having an easier time personally stomaching it because I think, and I think we also, you know, when it comes to if you break down Rick as a winner, I don't know if you necessarily hold it against him as much as the season that he just happened to be on a season where this was a thing. In another world, of course, he would be in Australia right now, sunbathing with Wendy, who's trying to probably free all the chickens from the local, I don't know, Melbourne KFC. But I think that, you know, he just happened to benefit from the metrics of this particular season, just like other seasons have it in other ways as well. Ben benefited from the final four fire-making twist. Parvati benefited from the final three going down to the final two in Survivor Micronesia. It just seems like maybe this is the biggest thing, because this was such a big shift in game structure, perhaps the biggest that Survivor has ever seen, the fact that it might actually happen is, to Mr. Spalding's great point, a little tough to wrap your brain around at first.
Mike, will it bother you if the winner of Survivor, whether it's Rick or whether it's the person that comes back from the Edge of Extinction, goes on to win this season?
It would bother me less if it was Rick than if it was the other person. If it's the other person that really brings
about...
What
if it was Aurora? Well, hypothetically, what if it was Aurora, she just got voted out? It'd be like a real like Johnny Mac where she's out, she's back in the next day.
I hate puzzles. What are you doing? Diverse psychology.
I hate basketball.
I hate it. if we played against the other doctors, the dentists always lose. It's like pulling teeth, literally, to work with Devons. I think that Aurora might be a little... I think what it comes down to is just if you have someone like a Joey Amazing come out who has missed half the game and have them come in, that sort of just invalidates the main game of Survivor. I think that's sort of the complaint that people had about Redemption Island to begin with was, oh, we're going to have somebody win the game who could have possibly spent all this time doing nothing to benefit their own strategic game. They just happened to get lucky with this rope and then make it through a couple of votes. Rick would seem less egregious because he has had to work his ass off, whether or not, he needed to work his ass off. If he put himself in situations where he didn't necessarily need to work his ass off is one thing to be said. But I think the other thing about it, I've been debating back and forth, and I know that you've asked returning players on your podcast, would you vote for someone who would come back from the game? But I think that's an exercise in frivolity in doing so, because one thing that I think is really going to benefit Rick here is that this is not a Survivor Pearl Islands Lil situation where they said, no matter what, we're not voting for an outcast. Because I think the jury is going to take into perspective that, yes, Rick did come back from the edge of extinction. Yes, he was voted out. But that was a chance we all got. I feel like in seasons where everyone is sort of presented, or most people are presented with that opportunity, it plays a lot more mildly on their taste buds than if it was just, oh, two people came back pre-merge and we didn't have a chance to come back when we were voted off. That's unfair. We should vote against that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a very polarizing season for a lot of different reasons, and it seems like that seemingly almost everybody has found something to complain about with season 38 of Survivor. That is, except for one person, our next guest, who's here to talk about why Survivor: The Edge of Extinction is perhaps the best season of Survivor. Let's bring them in.
Oh gosh. Thank you so much, Survivor Devil, for dictating that to us, punctuation included. I just knew you had your grimy little mitts all over this season when it was first announced. It seems like you laid off mostly on Survivor David versus Goliath. You didn't even make an appearance.
Oh, that was a biblical story. Did not care for that one. What a stinker.
I guess so. Once we sort of steered away from that and more towards the Necronomicon of Survivor, that's when your time to shine was?
Bloom, this is my baby, as opposed to your baby that I want to make you a trade offer at some point down the road. But let me say, when I first pitched my idea for Survivor Edge of Extinction to Mark Burnett and Jeff Probst, when I made my pitch, I was like, come on, Devil, come on, Devil, come on, Devil. I could not believe that they took all of my suggestions.
Now, just to be clear, I feel like they did walk back your initial suggestion of actually killing the players, right? You said Edge of Extinction was to be taken literally at first.
Yes, obviously, there was some pushback on that. But when I first said, okay, here's my pitch. All right, we've got everybody who's on the show is never eliminated. They can come back and win at any point, multiple points. We'll keep bringing people back, bring in returning players also mixed with the newbies. That was also my idea.
Was this all part of, like, were you attaching, addendums to this as you were going along, or was this all one big package, a nicely wrapped package like Rick Devon's idol that you presented to them?
Yes, that was all one big package. package that I put together. Bloom, I think that we have known each other for a couple of years now. That's fair to say that we've become very close, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
You don't have to be so formal. You can call me by my first name, Rick.
Yes. All right. I'm surprised that you let
Rick
that fact.
Devils is my real name.
Ah, that makes sense. And might I say, your jingle, I'd say, beats that news theme any day of the week. It's much catchier.
Dun, 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 dun. Bloom, we are making so many big changes in Survivor Hell as we speak that now let me explain how this is going to work. So here at Survivor Hell, we had the whole thing that we do with torturing everybody, but now we have somebody show up and I'm all like, dude, you are so lame. Look at you. You know what, dude? Screw you. Oh, it's brilliant.
Oh, yes, the D-Ream. I've heard about them.
Yeah, Reem Daly is amazing. So much fun to watch. I'm having all of my minions are watching her in training videos nonstop.
So you have a workplace training videos where you have like, here's what Aubrey's doing. Don't be like Aubrey. Be like Reem when it comes to approaching people.
Yes, Reem Daly is our motto around here.
It's a real goofus and gallant situation when it comes to your workplace training videos in Survivor Hell.
Absolutely. Be like Reem if you want to work here in Survivor Hell.
Now, I know that Ron Clark has set up a good amount of rules. I can only assume Rick Devils. Do you have a set of rules as well for Survivor Hell?
Yes. We have the 666 rules of being the Survivor Devil.
Wow. Okay. I can only imagine what some of them are, considering how you have really set up an illustrious
career. You'll find out soon.
Oh boy, that does not portend well to me. I'm just going to pretend that's reverse psychology, and that I'm actually not going to be encountering those rules soon.
Well, you never know.
That's true. I got to keep my opportunities up and go for broke. Nothing to lose, right?
Bloom, I've been so busy this whole season. This has really just been such a grind. You know, I'm editing the episodes, right?
Oh, okay. So how does that work? Do you just sort of pull names out of a hat and you decide those are going to be the important people that week?
Yes, it's a very small hat.
Oh, it's a crappy diaper, right?
It's War Dog's hat.
Oh, it's a very noticeable hat, though.
Love War Dog. That guy is killing it. You know, I'm running his social media, right?
Oh, really? Okay, that... Now a lot of numbers are coming together now in my head. That's the meme of all the math sort of falling into the pictures, knowing that you run War Dog's social media.
Yeah. I'm also the guy that told Rick Devins to say La Cheesery. That was my line. I wrote that.
You wrote La Cheesery. Are you a fan of the Tony Krumholtz or whatever his podcast is?
Tony Kornheiser, yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm confusing him with David Krumholtz, the actor.
Bloom, we've got so many big things coming up for Survivor that I hope everybody is strapped in.
Oh no, that makes me very, very nervous. You want to give us a tease of what's to come?
Oh, don't worry, just hang in there. Bloom, are you enjoying the Amazing Race?
Oh, my goodness, Survivor Devil, I have been absolutely loving it. Though I do have a question. I think we brought up when we actually first convened on this podcast a while ago that I believe Amazing Race God is a different type of God. Have you consulted with Amazing Race God at all in terms of who got brought on this season? Because if you did, the results make a lot of sense.
All right, Bloom, let me go. I've got a meeting with the producers of Million Dollar Mile.
Okay, great. I won't let you get too hung up. I just want to take
Tim Tebow off there. That's the first move we're going to make to bring that back.
Well, talking about reaching across the aisle, considering how much of a biblical man he is. But I just wanted to thank you, Survivor Devil, on air for the baby gift. I'll admit, I don't exactly know what I can do with the rice bucket that Brandon Hance peed in Survivor Karamoan, but I guess we can put it in some sort of corner somewhere and let it be a relic of the...
Never put
very
baby gift in the corner. Remember that, always.
Yes, I guess
baby gift in the corner.
Is that a rule of Survivor, Devil?
Yes, that's one. It's in the 500s.
Yes, that's where you put the dirty in Dirty Dancing. But I want to thank you for that. Obviously, our relationship is very interesting to begin with, but I'm glad we were able to find out the Mr. Big reveal of your name, Rick Devils, and I can't wait to find out more details about you as the seasons progress.
Bloom, be sure to stay tuned for the finale on Wednesday night. I've got a lot planned, trust me.
Oh boy, all right, I will
I've
be on the edge
of notes for the reunion show.
We'll all be on the edge of my seat as others are not on the edge of extinction.
Yes. All right. Bloom, I will talk to you again soon. Real soon.
Oh boy. All right. TTYL. Not too soon, okay?
Okay. You got it. All right. Rack me. I'm out.
Did you say rack me?
Jim Rome is better than Tony Kornheiser.
Okay. Well, this is completely lost on me, but I appreciate it.
Oh, wow. Survivor Devil coming in.
I mean, you could sort of tell his fingerprints were all over this season, but at least he sort of stepped forward and, you know, we didn't need to necessarily solve the murder here. He admitted himself in the first act of this voicemails podcast.
Okay, boy. He had a lot to do with the Survivor Edge of Extinction, the Survivor Devil back.
I wonder what he had to do with the actual Edge of Extinction element from this episode. That seems like it's out of his corner.
Please
as well.
don't conjure him. Don't keep talking about him because
otherwise certain people will need to be sent a lifetime supply of throat lozenges if I keep just summoning him.
We still have a lot to do here on this podcast. Before we move on, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor here today, and those are friends over at Dole, who ask, who doesn't love a tasty smoothie in the morning? Problem is, it's easy to get stuck on autopilot, making the same smoothies every single day. And even the best smoothies can start to get boring and predictable. So why not mix things up a little bit with Dole Crafted Smoothie Blends? They do all the work for you, pairing only the most delicious fruits together into unique blends, like taking the typical banana and berry smoothie and mixing it up with mangoes and refreshing limes and kiwis, or you could treat yourself to a sip of paradise with the strawberry watermelon blend with delicious coconut. The best part, they're born to be blended. Each bag is perfectly proportioned with fruit that's frozen to lock in all those nutrients and flavor, and every piece is already washed and cut. So all you have to do is fill up your blender with one of the single serving bags, add some coconut water, and then blend for an exciting smoothie. Dole Crafted Smoothie Blends. Find them in your frozen aisle. Okay, Mike, we have a lot to do here still. And let me go ahead and bring in this question. And I thought that this was a good point. This was brought up by one of our voicemail callers. Let's go to Noah from Cincy.
Hey, Rabio. It's Noah from Cincinnati, Ohio. In this week's episode, Rick told the rest of the players that he got his latest idol from someone at the Edge of Extinction to prevent them from searching for idols themselves. However, Lauren found an idol herself on the original Manu tribe and knows that Kelly found an idol on the original Lesu tribe. Therefore, as she pointed out in the confessional, she knew that Rick was lying and that she needed to point this out to everyone else. However, she was likely too scared to come out about this fact since she didn't want people to know that she had an idol herself. But why not just say that she knows Rick is lying because she knows that Kelly found an idol on Lesu? This would get the rest of the players to hunt for the idol and keep closer tabs on Rick while still not giving away the fact that she herself has an idol. Would love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, this is a good catch here by Noah, and this is that scene, and this was actually very fun on the watch through. Here is Lauren confronting Rick.
You little liar! I never expected you to not send you that idol. That idol was on this beach.
Nah, that was a gift, Dave.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
I love this scene because this is first one of the only scenes in which Lauren is not eye rolling at everything Rick is saying.
Yes, actually, let me just play the rest of it, and then we'll come back.
I know for a fact it wasn't Rick.
I hope there's one out here.
I need it.
I know you had it. You could tell me. I don't care.
I mean,
the
vote still went against me last night, so I don't feel like I can trust anybody.
Yeah, she's getting nowhere with Rick Devins.
What I love about it, too, is that she's not eye-rolling, but she's almost eye-rolling through her teeth, if that makes sense. She's eye-teeth-rolling, where she's like, I know you have it, Rick. Just say you have it, Rick.
Come on. We all know you have the idol. It's a beautiful day out here. No, come on, Rick. Come on. You and I know. Idol, there you have it. Boy, I could go for some rice today.
Oh boy, my glasses they haven't been cleaned in a while, huh? Yeah. I just love all the non-sequiturs going back and forth, like, oh man, it was an awesome moment last night. I had nothing to do with that. And they just sort of like, ooh, for the last two Manus, isn't that fun? Like, just the most awkward way of playing it off. And Lauren just really trying to really dig into him, but Rick is not cracking whatsoever.
Yeah. What do you think about the idea? Should she have said, look, I know the idols are here because Kelly Wentworth had an idol.
Do you think it would reflect badly on Lauren that she didn't tell anyone else that Kelly had an idol, if that's the case? You know, because I do think that what is so interesting about this is it comes back to, as James Limbs put it, information asymmetry. And it's so interesting to see that I think both Rick and Lauren were sort of working to the best of their knowledge in terms of what they thought people knew and only they knew, with Rick saying, oh yeah, this came from the Edge of Extinction because all advantages do. And Lauren saying, well, I know that's not a fact because I happen to get mine. But I wonder if her sort of fessing up about Kelly's idol would say, what else are you lying about, Lauren? And considering how fracturous it seems that Alliance of Four is to begin with, whenever you sort of look one way and then look back, I wonder if she's not looking for any sort of reason for them to turn on her or doubt her.
Yeah. I just don't know why we even saw this scene if she wasn't going to call him out. It just seems like she has this information but is not doing anything with it.
Yeah, and it's so interesting how she has been able to sit on that, not only sit on that idol for so long, but just sit on the information about it for so long.
Unless, it was that part of her decision of, I can't vote for Julie at this tribal council because I bet Rick Devins has another idol because he's out here looking for it, and then I have to keep Julie in the game.
Well, I wonder if there was something that could have happened where, because I feel like I could see why Lauren made the decision that she did. You and Steven brought up the great points about how when it gets near the end game, as frenetic as all this has been, you want to cling to the life raft of the person that you think can bring you to the end, or you want to go with to the end, especially at this point. And she found that in Julie. But she also has this sort of guarantee in this idol where she doesn't necessarily need to play it if Rick doesn't. You know, if Rick actually goes through with his bluff, if it's reverse psychology, and he ends up playing this idol, she could pull a Jeremy Collins and say, oh yeah, I have my idol too, I'll just play this here, and that'll sort of guarantee her own safety. Yes, she'll be left vulnerable at the final six and five, but she's insulated by allies, it seems, on all sides. So I don't exactly know, you know, if she needs to be playing as conservatively with it. It is a nice guarantee to have something in the pocket, but if you have something in the pocket, much like Rick was sort of doing this episode, it allows you to play a bit more fast and loose.
Okay. Speaking of all these idols, let's listen to a voicemail from Real BG Low.
Hey, Rob. Real BG Low here. Big fan of you and Christian. Long time. Could we be headed for another advantage get-in? Two people are going to be immune from the votes because they will have the deadlock votes. One person will have immunity. Devins has an idol, and Lauren has an idol. So there's a small but very real possibility that someone could get Sereed. What do you think? Thanks.
Okay. All right. And sometimes people call in and leave a question for the recap guest, and we don't get to it. So.
Should I answer this question as Christian?
Yes,
would
please,
that help? Real
please.
Bigula? Okay. All right. Let me try to get into character here. Okay. Great. All right. Let's do this.
Okay. Christian, do you think that there is a possibility of advantage get in too?
Okay. So we need to really break this down into quantum structures. because that's essentially what advantages are, essentially. They're atoms that build into molecules that eventually build into building blocks, you know? It's the building blocks of Survivor society. So if you look at it this way, I think what happened in Survivor 34, in the finale that brought Suri out to roving applause in the audience was the fact that there were three idols being played, right? There was Troy Zan, then Ty played his two idols. I think what Bijilo might be doing, which is a bit rash, if you will, is that he's assuming it's going to be a deadlock tie. He's going off of the conventions that Rick is presenting of it being a 3-3 deadlock. I just think everyone is thinking so individualistically, as they should. You know, it's this concept of free radical molecules, electrons hopping from atom to atom that produce molecular bonding, if you will. It's the building blocks of our life that I don't think it might be a 3-3 tie, no matter who comes back. So I will say we can stave off Advantage Getting for one more round, one more season.
Yeah, I don't think that. Well done, Christian. So I would have to say I agree with you. The other thing going on in Advantage Geddon, which is not going on here, is that I don't think that they even got to the vote on Advantage Geddon, or at least read the votes, because it worked out that there were three idols played, individual immunity, and then also Sarah Lucina had the legacy advantage. So that was what ended up creating Advantage Geddon. This, I think, is more likely to be a scenario a la a Survivor Cambodia Final Six, where I think it's possible, and again, Rick Devens has his idol, so maybe they feel like, oh, but maybe they think he wants to hold it, and if Rick Devens doesn't win immunity, they convince Rick Devens that he's going to be safe and put three votes on him, and then also there's three votes on Lauren, and both of them play their votes, and then we end up with a 0-0 tie, as opposed to the Advantage Geddon scenario.
Do you think that, and I sort of, my Christian spirit just vacated my body off to, I don't know, watch some movies on the plane as we talked right there. Do you think that they would still vote for Rick at the final six, considering that Rick, I mean, you could say that he made a fake idol where we're saying, oh, it's the same, you know, Lisa Frank-esque paper that was wrapped up in his previous idol. But do you think because he brazenly showed it off last time, they would still put votes onto him?
Well, it's possible, and survivors have attempted radical things. There is a person coming back from the edge of extinction, and so hypothetically, you could imagine a scenario where the survivors convince Rick Devens, like, "Hey, we're gonna go after the person from the edge of extinction this round," and Rick is saying, "Like, hey, this is great for me. If I don't have to play my idol at six, I could get through this vote and then play my idol at five." So that there is a possibility, if, like, say hypothetically, Joe Anglim came back and didn't win immunity. It's like, well, we have to go for Joe on this round. But then they actually put their votes on Rick. But then he sniffs it out and plays his idol anyway.
Yeah, I could see that if they're trying to really get one over on them. But I don't know. I think that's going to be tough for Rick to believe, because I think one unfortunate, you know, circumstance of, again, totally going back to what you and Christian said, the fact that, and maybe in another world, you sort of bring Devens under this false sense of security and say, oh yeah, we're totally going to work together, and that's how you get him to flush an idol or blindside them with an idol. We saw this happen multiple times this season, but they are so blatantly adamant about being against him that he does not have an iota of trust in any of those people. Why would he believe them if they came to him and said, oh yeah, we're going to vote off the person this time? He's going to say, you've been targeting me for the past nine days.
Really,
you really think
all the more reason,
player?
Mike, that best case scenario is then you vote out Joe Anglim and Rick wastes his idol at that tribal council. I mean, that would kind of be, and then Rick is vulnerable to be voted out at the final five.
I don't know, though, because, I mean, Rick has also been winning challenges, and he's been finding idols, and if he plays it at the final six, there's still a chance he can find one and play one at the final five. You know, I think that the interesting thing that sort of flip-flopped on this season is that in the beginning of the merge, you had people like Joe and Eric get voted off so quickly because you said, ooh, let's fear these big, strong guys who are good in challenges. Rick has now become that person, maybe by virtue of the fact that all those guys have been voted off. I'd personally take a chance on more of the unknown with maybe some of these other people who come back in and don't have the records in front of them, as opposed to Rick, who has proved himself dangerous and at least keeping himself safe. Whether interpersonally or strategically, maybe not so much, but when it comes to getting day to day, he has proved that he's been able to do that, and that is extremely dangerous when you only have 3 days left in the game. It's the survivor, it's the Rick Devils you do versus the Rick Devils you don't know.
Okay. Let's take another voicemail. Let's check in with Daniel in Dallas.
Hey, so this is Daniel from Waxahachie, just south of Dallas. I was just listening to the Survivor B&B, and all season I have been surprised that nobody knows who Ron Clark is. I'm an educator, and Ron Clark is like an educator celebrity. Any teacher in the country has heard of Ron Clark. Teachers from all over the country go to intern at the Ron Clark Academy. I've been to an in-service where he was the keynote speaker before. And I know teachers that are watching Survivor this season just because of Ron Clark. So I'm really shocked that no one on the show knows who he is and that none of the podcasters seem to know who he is because he's like the education guru. So anyways, just wanted to pass that on. Wonder what your guys' thoughts on that is. Bye.
Okay. First off, before we answer that question, also that he mentioned a big fan of the B&B, let me play this voicemail for you.
Hey, Rob. Liana here, longtime listener, first-time caller. I'm not entirely sure how to talk to Mike Bloom unless it's on podcast, so I'm just calling in to say hi to Mike. Hey, Mike. Hope everything's going well. Hope you're enjoying the voicemails podcast, and I'll talk to you later. All right. Love you, bae.
Okay.
This might be the most literal voicemail we've had on a Survivor voicemail podcast.
Yeah. Okay. So shout out to Liana, who's holding down the B&B again this week without Mike
Which
Bloom.
Which is needed. We barely have a roof on that place, so she's really tried to clamp down on it.
Okay. All right. But let's go back to Dan's question. And by the way, people, check out the B&B as well this weekend, I believe. Pooja and Kirsten McInnes on this week's episode.
Absolutely. We went north to bring back a couple of great podcasters to talk about the end of this season, and certainly a lot of talk involved. Interesting watching their opinions online, especially over the Rick Devins topic, so I'm sure there's going to be a lot of great conversation on there.
Okay. Let's go and bring on Dan's question about Ron Clark being the educational celebrity. Did you know about this, Mike?
So I was aware of it. I think the issue is, and I will sort of contest Dan's point a bit, that our first guest on the B&B was Paul Osselson, who sent kids to the Ron Clark Academy, knew of his book, you know, knew his story. I think it's unfortunately just ignorance from the fact that we don't work in the educational field, nor am I as attuned in to the made-for-TV movies as maybe the Hallmarkies podcast would have. I only thought of Ron Clark as the dancing guy who kind of sounds like Mr. DNA from Jurassic Park, but I'm happy to know more about him.
Mr. DNA.
Can't you hear that now? Just like his nice, lilting, positive voice.
So, what does he say? Like, hey, here's a mosquito, and this mosquito just got trapped in a bunch of amber.
Hey.
Yeah. The amber.
Watch it, Ron.
That yellow amber is going to fester over time and turn into, boom, dino DNA. Those are my friends, my dino friends.
These are my friends. Okay. Mike, it has come to my knowledge that you have recently gotten a chance to see the aforementioned Ron Clark story.
Yeah, so here's the thing. When you have a newborn, you have a lot of weird patches of downtime, and especially last week on the B&B, there was a lot of talk about the Ron Clark movie.
With Kurt Clark and Akiva.
Yes, exactly. And so I thought, okay, let me see. I have some time between feedings. Let me see if I can check this out. And good news is it's pretty much a public resource at this point. It is for free on Amazon Prime at a slim 90 minutes. That's half a Christian podcast, folks. You can get the Ron Clark story for your own viewing pleasure.
Okay. So, hypothetically, is there a piece of it that I should queue up that you want to talk about, Mike?
I mean, I can sort of just talk through. I mean, if you want to play through the first, like, 2 minutes of the movie, maybe. There's a very interesting scene that I think sets up the general quality and schmaltiness of the Ron Clark film.
Okay, so the Ron Clark story. Here he is with Mr. Chandler Bing. What point are we going to skip ahead to?
Let me see just one second. It's like the first scene. I just think it's a really stupid scene. And we can talk about more plot points.
So let's talk. Let's see, see Matthew Perry walking into school. Aurora, North Carolina. Is that why he hates Aurora so much?
Oh, my God. I think we broke it open.
Wow.
Wow. Oh, my God. That's a revelation. This is totally Slumdog Millionaire stuff. Yeah.
If you think that it was going to be hard to win $1 million, then I should get $2 million for being from Aurora, North Carolina.
Yeah. I should get $3 million for teaching in Aurora, North Carolina. Okay. And teaching Aurora how to portion out rice.
Okay. Let me go back to Matthew Perry here.
Ron Clark, ready for your first day?
Yes, ma'am.
I'll be with you in a minute, and I'll introduce you to your class.
Okay. So Ron Clark looks over and sees a kid in a garbage pail.
Not a literal garbage pail kid, but yes, we should also detect, in case you haven't had your ear finally attuned, nary a southern accent coming out of Matthew Perry's mouth. I think, I'll talk about this later, the authenticity on the Ron Clark story is not
based
very closely
based on a true
hewn.
Story. Based on a true story.
This is very much like a Rick Devins-like approach of, yeah, this is how Ron Clark sounded, and this is how he acted, absolutely.
Based on events in the life of Ron Clark.
Hi. What happened to you?
Teacher says I can't learn, so I should go with the trash.
Okay, settle down. Let's get out our silent reading.
I'm Mr. Clark. What's your name?
Hadley Craig.
What's the kid's name?
Hadley Craig, which sounds like if someone was trying to write a knockoff To Kill a Mockingbird fan fiction, like that's the character they would name their main, their lead.
Nice to meet you. You know, I'm so sorry. I'm so forgetful. What's my name again?
It's Mr. Clark.
Oh, see? You just learned something. Let's get you out of there.
Mr. Clark?
Yeah.
Is you gonna be our new teacher?
Did the kid put himself in the garbage pail? Or did the teacher put him in the garbage pail?
I believe this was a sanctioned punishment from the teacher to say, you, as the kid so astutely put it, you must stand out in there with the other garbage. Please stand in this wastebasket.
Your game is trash. So go stand in the waste paper basket. Oh, wait, we're not doing that anymore. Boy, it's a good thing Ron Clark came along to get kids out of the garbage pails.
Exactly. I think Ron Clark single-handedly ended the garbage pail kid phenomenon. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. He said, listen, you gotta stop making those cards. Teachers are being encouraged by it.
Yes. Okay. Well, this sounds like the school was really going to let's go see the Survivor Devil, and Ron Clark came in and got this thing straightened out.
I also love how the first words of the movie are literally the words Ron Clark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
So, but we're spending only a brief second here. Compare this to like the Edge of Extinction as compared to the rest of the episode. So Ron Clark, they sort of yada yada through the fact that he fixed Aurora elementary school, and so he goes in for a challenge. He literally spends 30 seconds
but
saying
what are
goodbye.
The chances, I mean, that Aurora is not a common name.
I don't know. I really am not sure that it's just, I think it's serendipity that she happened to play on the same season. Mm-hmm. When he spent such a big tenure of his life in Aurora, North Carolina. And if that's the case, you know, I feel like he was the one to try to bring her over to his side. You know, he tried to talk her down after the Jovo, and maybe that's why he had sort of personal reverberations with her.
So weird. This really is wild.
So Ron Clark decides, much like he did last episode, to move away from Aurora, to go up to the big city to really teach these underprivileged kids. And there are several question marks about this movie that now I can sort of fill in the blanks. There were some questions as to, why is there a scene where Ron Clark drinks a bunch of milk?
Yes.
Well, In order to connect with the kids, Ron Clark essentially decides to humiliate himself. I guess much like I used the same method to introduce myself to my child, accidentally so, he decides to metaphorically drop his pants by saying, "All right, I'm going to teach you grammar, and you have to stay silent and astute. Every 15 seconds, if you do that, I'm going to drink a carton of chocolate milk." He was essentially creating, like, his own challenge within the classroom.
Oof. Yes.
Yeah, it basically went the way of Primetime 99 Alex Stein by the end of it. There was also a question as to why does Ron Clark dress up as Robin Hood at one point? When he is short on cash, he didn't have that $2 million for putting up with Aurora, North Carolina, neither the person Aurora. Ron Clark works in a unnamed themed restaurant dressed up as Robin Hood. Here's the interesting wrinkle in the story. Again, based on true events, Ron Clark falls for a lovely young woman named, Miranda? Not Lloyd, but it's the person who's dressed up like Cleopatra. So yeah, certain liberties. I would say, taken with the with the Ron Clark story. It
not
seems.
Like Lady Liberty, as Dr. Mike would point out.
No, and Lady Liberty was she was out that shift. The person who dressed up like her had to clock out for the weekend. She had a thing to do.
Okay, all right. So do you recommend the Ron Clark story?
Absolutely not.
Oh.
It's a fine movie, and you know what? It's inspirational enough. If you do want to see Matthew Perry doing, they actually do the Ron Clark President's Rap, and it is even weirder having Chandler Bing do it. It's like a copy of a copy, just watching this sort of be passed through. And they end the movie by all doing like a Mighty Ducks-esque group hug while chanting the President's Rap, which I guess is their rousing theme. I mean, I would say it's typical, you know, stand and deliver fare. That has some weird Matthew Perry performances in there. And the small details like Aurora, North Carolina, and the fact that Ernie Hudson plays the beleaguered principal, because much like his character Winston, he'll do anything for a paycheck. I think it's it's a fine movie, but it's not either trash worthy to watch it all or great enough to really indulge an hour and a half into it.
Okay, all right, Mike, let's go ahead to our next voicemail, and let's bring in another one of our callers who's excited about the finale and the reunion.
Hey, my two dads. The highlight for me on this Wednesday is going to be what buzzword you think we'll hear in the live reunion show. I think Mike got a little bit of an unfair edge last time with the word show, but I never rooted so hard to hear bird in my life. You each get to pick five words, but they need to be unique to this season's story. So what do you think about? Head passengers, will Reen get a dude? Choose carefully, because this could be the shortest reunion yet.
Okay. All right, Mike, it's time to play everybody's favorite game. What will be said at the finale?
Why did we choose this song? It has nothing to do. It's an 8-bit song. Feels like it was popularized by the time
Bob Clark was chief. On this that we used to get voicemails from the Woj, Matthew Wojcicki, and he called in, and we don't know what song he used to call in. It had something to do with Donkey Kong, so this is just now some other version of Donkey Kong. So until we get the real song, that we don't have it.
I'm pretty sure that's the original Donkey Kong song from the arcade machine.
All right, Mike, how is Donkey Kong like Survivor?
Well, you know what? When you keep jumping up paths and you're dodging barrels left and right, whether they be advantages or opponents, you think you get there, but then, damn it, somebody grabs that mallet and they go crazy. But when you grab a mallet, you think you have the advantage, you can't jump as far, and boom, a blindsided barrel takes you out, and your Pauline $1 million is lost to some other big ape.
Mm-hmm. And Sierra Dawn Thomas, I think, could just like walk across those barrels, though, right?
I mean, half of Worlds Apart did in that one challenge, so.
Yeah, she's got this. Okay, all right. So, last season, we changed things up that you and I had been drafting who will speak, it started off, we used to draft who won't speak, then we drafted who will speak.
Who will speak, and then we went to what word will be said, and it's interesting because I feel like what word will be said, the reunion ironically went back to the old format where we could have theoretically done who won't be spoken to.
Mm-hmm. Right. But this time around, I am projecting a very long episode proper, and I don't even think we're going to, you know, get to the live reading of the votes until about 10:30 Eastern time, if I had to project this.
I will also project that I do not think we're going to get our typical sixth or fifth placer comes out to Jeff and the audience to talk about how much of a fan favorite they become, just because... No offense to this cast, I really doubt that unless a huge character comes back from the edge.
If it's Devins, I think they'll do it.
They're not having Rick Devins go out in sixth or fifth. If they do, maybe, but I highly doubt that's the case.
If Rick Devins does go out at fifth or sixth, that he will definitely get that interview spot. Are you saying that he will not? Are you saying that it's unlikely, that it's impossible he's going to be voted out at fifth or sixth?
I would say the latter. If it is the former, I hope they set up a nice.
What if he
little,
makes it
like,
to four and he loses the fire making? Do they talk to him then?
Maybe I could see a chance of that happening. I just personally think, from a storytelling perspective, considering how much has been given to us, I know that there's still a lot of story to go, and I don't know if it necessarily means, oh yes, Rick is definitely winning, GG. But I think at this point, it would be foolish to not see Rick at least in the final three. If not outright winning, if he does fall to four, five, or six, I hope Survivor rolls out a nice, cardboard paper banner so that Rick can burst through, like, the Kool-Aid man that he has prophesied a long time ago.
Yeah, he could walk out onto the finale stage and... Oh, yeah! Okay. Mike, how about this question? If the returning player to the game turns out to be one of the returning players, and they get voted out right away at six, do we talk to them?
That's a good question. I feel like if it's Aubrey or Joe, no. I feel like if it's David, maybe. I think the returning who stands the highest chance of getting... Yeah, I think that the person who stands the highest chance of getting talked to as a returnee is Kelly Wentworth.
Okay. I think any of the returnees comes back into the game and then goes out before the final four, then I think we definitely talk to them.
I don't know, because I guess it depends on, like, if they're sort of, you know, utilizing their economy and saying, okay, we're dedicating more time to the show and less time to the reunion. I guess it would be a way to sort of kill two birds with one stone. I don't know. It's tough finding people this season, even from the returnee perspective, that you could compare to, like, a Davey or a Donathan or like a Dr. Mike or a Devin that you say, yes, we need to bring them out in the middle of the reunion to have the audience react to them.
Okay. If it's Reem, will Reem get that spot?
Oh, man, I wish. Oh, how I wish that would happen, just to have Reem dress Jeff down to give him the roasting that has
you
never
know
really
what,
happened.
That this whole idea was, I think she's probably pro Edge of Extinction. I mean, she would have been long forgotten if it was not for the Edge of Extinction.
Can I mention one quick thing about your Reem impression that I love oh so dearly?
What's that?
So, obviously, I know that you are, since it's a very loud impression, you're leaning yes. away from your mic to not make your audio peak, but it sort of sounds like, at all times, Reem is just, like, hovering around in the room and hears you talking about her and is just, like, yelling off mic at you.
You know what, dude? You think I don't hear what's going on? You think I don't know? Like, what, do I have a sign across my head that says, stupid idiot loser?
You know what, dude? I'm just in the corner trying to clean out this rice pea basket and I'm hearing all these things about me.
Oh, yes. They have to talk to Reem. They have to talk to Reem when they go, if they do that spot. Okay. So that being said, Mike, we ended up last season landing on the word draft of nouns. Who won that? Did you win that?
So I think, surprisingly enough, I did, but I think it was purely by I'm like Aurora. I'm not a big basketball fan, so I'm going to bungle this reference, but I feel like I found my sort of like Kobe Bryant of that team. As the voicemailer pointed out, it was the word show, which by far carried the weight of my team. The bird, ironically enough, was a nice big albatross and did not get any points.
Okay. All right, so let's go back and forth, and we'll each draft five words, and we are counting the number of times that word is said, and Mike, as the winner of the draft, I will give you the first pick.
Ooh, boy. Okay.
And let's just a couple of ground rules. Actually, Maybe it's not fair for just me to set the ground rules, but let's take some words off the table. So let's have our agreed upon words that do not count. Let's have
a table of certain words that you are promptly released, cutting the ropes on and slamming down as your auction idea here.
So let's just banned words are edge, extinction, player, move.
Mm-hmm.
Just generic words that are sort of just like survivor words. We're looking for specific words that pertain to this particular season. And no proper names.
All right. Well, let me start in some gray.
Let's take idle immunity off the plate.
Okay. So then from that perspective, can I start in some gray territory and say advantage?
You take advantage out, you know. That,
darn.
Yes.
Advantage is off the menu?
Off the menu, okay. So that being said, let's see if we can nail down our draft.
All right, well, I'm going to have to... Let me start with an easy word to deal with the theme. Let's say quit.
Quit. Okay.
I think, again, I have no idea who we're going to be talking to in this. We might have a better chance of talking to another celebrity that's in the audience or a child that likes to ride on Jeff's back than, you know, the actual players. But I feel like if and when we do talk to someone who is on the edge of extinction, they'll talk constantly about the fact that I was going to quit. I did not quit. I persevered and made it to whatever point I did.
Good. Okay. Mike, what about if Jeff Probst says these words, is that okay?
I mean, considering that I won purely from the fact that Jeff said show so many times, okay, I think it has to be grandfathered
all
in.
Right.
Yeah.
I got to go with the daily double here. I'm going to go with...
Ream daily
dude!
Double.
And I'm going to go with lame.
Could you imagine Ream as the host of Jeopardy now that... I mean, God forbid, if should things go south for Alex Trebek...
Don't
I
put
think
it out in the
a,
universe, Mike. Take it
think,
back.
I think we,
take it back.
We have a good... I take it back. I take it back. But it could be a possible replacement.
Yes. Okay. They should consider her. She should get her reel together. Okay. Dude and lame are going to be both off the list.
All right. Well, then let me take the double right special here. I'll go with pilot and passenger.
Ooh. Okay.
I figured I'd cover my bases here. I don't know if it will be referenced just because it feels like it has not been mentioned a lot since David's left his time in the game and apparently disappeared from the show, save a couple of letter reads in this episode. But I figured I'd cover everything here in terms of major terminology.
Okay. Boy. Now it's getting thin. Now we're getting down to the, how about the word news?
Okay. All right. I'm feeling it.
Okay.
Now I'll give you a caveat.
I get two
yes,
here.
I'll count news if Rick Devins sings his oh so catchy snatchy theme song.
Dun 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 dun.
You get a sixth of a point for every dun that comes out of his mouth.
Okay. All right. So let's go with news and let's go with wedding.
Okay. Oh, okay. Speaking about Gavin.
Well,
unless you're hoping for some sort of Joe and Sierra on the stage wedding at the edge of extinction.
I don't think I think I got a few outs there.
I think that's what might be what Survivor Devil's alluding to. If Sierra can navigate those Donkey Kong barrels down to the stage.
Yeah, let's talk about Gavin's wedding and it looks like we're going to have another Survivor wedding. Okay, when's the wedding, Joe and Sierra? I think that could be a possibility.
All right. Let's see here.
Mike has quit, pilot, and passenger.
I guess let's go with... Let's go with return.
Return? Okay.
As if they're debating who will return.
Hmm.
Now, it is interesting, not to go on too much of a tangent in the middle of this game, but it is really interesting how it feels like... I personally feel like there is so much going behind the scenes as to people debating who's going to come back from the edge of extinction and how that might affect their voting. But it is nary mentioned on the actual show itself, which I feel like is very different than what we usually see in terms of people strategizing around Redemption Island previously. Do you think it's going on and it's just not mentioned?
I don't know. I think we'll find out.
I guess it just depends because, you know, I'm still not in the camp where I'm not entirely sure if Gavin and Victoria made the right decision here, considering that it's such a wide open field as to who comes back from the edge of extinction that you can dispute Rick's point that it would be a guaranteed 3-3 should somebody come back. And so why discard someone who is supposed to be loyal to you rather than just sort of take a shot in the dark with Julie? And if Rick does play the idol, then you know what? You get a chance as well to come back. So maybe the return can be mentioned there, especially if Rick ends up having a winning narrative here. That's a huge part of his story.
Okay. All right. You have one and I have one left.
So I am going to go with, now I don't want to necessarily make this a thing where my fifth man is always a wild card here. And I don't know if I'll go as high as Bird did, but let me aim in the altitude category because I'm thinking about the topography of the Edge of Extinction. Now, I'm thinking about Jeff's extravagant claims about the pizza temptation that happened at the reward challenge that one time. My final word is going to be mountain.
Oh. I think you're going to say pizza.
No, I don't. I doubt
pizza
will be... I think
pizza might have been better than mountain.
I don't know. I doubt pizza will be mentioned unless... I mean, maybe the reunion goes super long and they ask on stage for pizza. I feel like mountain just has so many uses. And they could say emotionally, I had to... you know, yoke myself up the mountain to eventually summit the peak and raise the flag, even though that meant quitting.
Okay. For my final word, I will say sail. Sail is my final word.
Now, let's go homophobic here. Are we going with sail, S-A-I-L, or S-A-L-E?
S-A-I-L.
Okay, so if Rick says, I have a new memoir for sale, or Wendy says, I have a new Edge of Extinction t-shirt line for sale, we're not going to count that?
If Wardog tells, okay, if anybody wants to get a tiny hat, I've got a new store.
That perfect, perfect for babies.
For sale. If you buy one of my hats, I'll call you on the phone.
I'll count with you. I'll learn to count.
17, 18, 19, 20.
Okay, perfect.
All right, there you go. Here's the list. Okay, 1 point for every time somebody says the words quit, pilot, passenger, return, or mountain for Mike Bloom. And then I get dude, lame, news, wedding, and sale. Should we also then go double or nothing for same list for the Game of Thrones episode this week?
Yeah, you know what? Let's do it. I think that considering that there is one character that falls into my category, I don't know if exactly the word pilot.
Yeah, but there's a Red Wedding. There could
That's
be news
true.
From Winterfell. There could be, you know, somebody could be taken lame.
Yes, someone. Bran, you're so lame. We could say. yes, Reem of House Dale has come in after the night. You thought the Night King was scary.
You're on Greyjoy is going to set sail. So
you could hear her from miles away. We could say Danny has lost something for Jon to pilot in the last episode.
Yeah, Drogon has a passenger. So all right, so let's keep track on both of these things.
And you know let's put in a third one here. Let's say if it's mentioned during I don't know, if it's mentioned during the Big Bang Theory finale, we'll put some points in there as
well. All right, we'll go to that'll be the best 2 out of 3 if it comes down to it. Okay. All right. Mike, let me thank another one of our sponsors, our other sponsor for this episode of the podcast, and those are our friends over at 23andMe. 23andMe. Stephen Fishback tried to correct me. 23andI. No, it's not what it's called. It's 23andMe. And Mike, I was very interested to hear, of course, that 23andMe, what they do is that they allow you to learn all sorts of cool things about your DNA, including your ancestry. But Mike, I found out that you yourself have done 23andMe.
Yes, so I've done it rather recently, at least. I asked for it for Christmas. from my parents, which I realize now might have been a bit insulting to their faces, saying, hey, I want to know where I come from. Can you please? I don't trust you. Let me spit into a tube and let a database determine. But they were all too happy to provide me with a kit.
It's a great gift.
It's a great gift for any holiday season, whether it be winter-based or Survivor finale-based. I was able to send in my results, lickety-split or lickety-spit, as it were, depending on the method of consumption of the details. And what I found out, and basically anyone can assume this by looking at a picture of me or probably hearing my voice, I am 45% Ashkenazi Jew, Rob.
Okay. All right. And the irony that this was a Christmas gift.
Exactly. They said, well, you picked the wrong holiday to do this for, but you know what? It's written in the stars, it seems.
All right. Well, as Mike Bloom demonstrates, it's a great gift. And this Mother's Day, for a limited time only, 23andMe is taking $30 off their health and ancestry kit until May 13th. It's a great deal. Give mom a gift that's truly unique with 23andMe's health and ancestry kit. Your mom can discover how her genes may influence her health and more with over 125 personalized genetic reports that feature information on her traits and health, like genetic weight, caffeine consumption, sleep, movement, and much more. Give mom a gift that's thoughtful for once with 23andMe's personalized wellness reports. She can learn how her genes are playing a role in her well-being and lifestyle choices. It's a gift that's insightful as well with 23andMe's trait reports. Mom can learn how her DNA influences her facial features, taste, smell, and other traits. And it's a gift that shows mom that you care, because she can learn how her genetics could influence her health. With the most comprehensive genetic ancestry breakdown on the market, mom can explore where her DNA is from out of over 1,000 regions worldwide, learn about genetic similarities and differences between herself and relatives, and opt in to connect with people who share her DNA. This Mother's Day, get $30 off 23andMe's health and ancestry kit at 23andme.com/Rob. That's the number 23andme.com/Rob. Again, that's 23andme.com/Rob. Offer ends May 13th. Okay.
Yeah, and the other thing I really like about 23andMe is that it did give me an option as well to see other people who also opted into the program that I might share relations with. In terms of blood relations. So it's cool. It's like discovering, you know, your own possible blood versus water partner. You are climbing a tree, much like Rick Devens did. It's just a family tree instead of an idol tree.
Okay. Mike, let's get back to the voicemails. And let's pick up with a question that I think is an interesting one that is from Lyndall.
Hi, Rob and Mike. It's Lyndall from Australia. In the seasons where there's a really lopsided edit, the storyline really doesn't make a lot of sense until after we've seen the finale, like in Ghost Island, for example. I think the story we're being told here is of the first 13-0 winner. Otherwise, I think Devens is coming fourth, and this is the weirdest robbed goddess edit that I have ever seen. I don't know what the hell's going on. What do you think the storyline of the season is? Thank you, and congrats, Mike.
Okay.
Thank you, Lyndall. Lyndall, just a big shout out to Lyndall, the most full bloom wand offer there is. My heart goes out to her in every way.
Yeah, that was a very clean voicemail from Lyndall.
Very classy
for you. Okay, Mike, do you think that Rick Devens could be on his way to a 13-0 win on Wednesday night?
First off, it is insane that, yes, we've been going on 19 years for Survivor, but the fact that we're talking about a possible 13-0 jury vote is one of the most goddamn ridiculous things I've heard in my life.
All right, so here's what I want to do. So 13, let's forget about 13-0. This is the question I want to ask you, that do you think that if Rick Devens goes on to win the game, will he set the record for the most votes cast for a winner of a season?
I think in most he will tie.
Okay. So you're calling he will not get more than 10.
Yeah, so here's what I'm thinking. I've sort of sketched out my own little final three here, and knowing how wrong my predictions are on the aforementioned B&B, do not take this as any sort of gospel. But the way I feel like I'm partially seeing, and again, this is all affected by who comes back from EOE, which we'll definitely talk about, but I'm seeing a possible final three as Lauren, Julie, and Rick.
Okay.
That's sort of the final three that I've been ruminating around. Now, if we're playing a little bit of Jury Jeopardy here, maybe that's the one that Reem can host. We have, I feel like Ron would definitely vote for Julie. I feel like Lauren would definitely get votes from Kelly, maybe from Gavin or Victoria, depending on the method that they go. And Rick could get the rest. So I feel like, depending on how things shake out, I still think Rick would win in those circumstances, but I feel like there's a chance that, especially because we don't have, I think this, I forget who talked about this, but I feel like when you get people together in Ponderosa, there can be a groupthink that does spread. We don't have groupthink going on Edge of Extinction. We get more food think than groupthink. So I think there will be a lot more, much like this season,
so
individual
votes. You think
it's votes.
Like a 9-3-1, potentially?
That's what I'm thinking, like a 9-3-1 or like an 8-4-1 or something like that. I feel like this could be a case where all three finalists get votes, depending on who's sitting there at the end. I do feel like if Rick is at the end, he will get the majority of the votes, but I don't think he's going to break 10.
Okay. Let's go to John in DC, who has a question.
Preseason, Nicole called dibs on Aurora being her divorce attorney. Now that we've seen her arc on Survivor, are you okay with letting Nicole have her? Does it change your mind that we know from this episode that Aurora is not good with words?
Yeah. She's good with talking. She said she's good with speaking. She's just not great on it. Right. If you cut apart the alimony papers into little strips and had her put them together, that's what she would struggle with.
She would struggle with that. Okay. So let's listen to a couple of clips from the episode. And this was from Aurora talking about how she was not thrilled with this week's immunity challenge.
Aurora, during the entire explanation, you were shaking your head, moving your body. What is happening right now?
I hate word puzzles.
She really hates them.
Well, Will Shorts is shook.
Yeah. And then this was during the challenge.
Aurora, she hates anything to do with words.
That's vegan.
That's a little shady.
I did love this. I love that we have now, if we're talking about the evolution of the game, I feel like the evolution of the clapbacks at Jeff during the challenges have evolved from the Penner salad days to now. We had that. We had Victoria this episode being like, hey, Jeff, I'm in it too. Or Julie with the hyperventilating thing from last week. There's a lot more.
Victoria has her first pieces back. Thank you, Victoria.
I love that.
Okay, so would I feel more comfortable with Nicole hiring Aurora as a divorce attorney? No, still, I still would not love that. I would prefer that Nicole's potential divorce attorney not have any sort of visibility into like the Survivor world. I would prefer that, you know, her lawyer would just think of her as like, who's this? Who are we talking about? This loser that does a podcast? What is that? Podcasting? Was that a hobby? All right. He's got nothing. Let's move on.
Yeah, I think the best bet would be like some fuddy-duddy old man mm-hmm. who feel like he came out of a crypt to be like, a podcast?
Podcast, yeah. Listen. You can't get blood from a stone. That just give up.
Exactly. He's worth nothing. In fact, you should be giving him money. He's going to need it soon.
Yeah, he's going to get alimony from you.
The only problem, the other problem would be Aurora would bring it in terms of the fashion wear to court. Did you see what she wore to ultimately her final tribal council here, Rob? Her fashion game was on fleek.
Why? What was that? The robe?
I mean, the robe was there, the pants. She did it. She has this like elastic band that I don't know if it was cut from something. God forbid if it was a pair of underwear, but she was wearing it as a choker. She had the white flower in her hair as if she stepped off this like disastrous 28-hour flight to Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Like, she was really cleaned up for what was surprisingly her final tribal council in the game. Maybe. Yeah. We'll see if she comes back.
Also, I would not want to go toe-to-toe with Aurora in the courtroom when my lawyer was saying, Your Honor, it means the most that My client is seeking full custody of the children and would be very upset if he did not get complete full custody of the kids.
How do you fall for reverse psychology?
And also, wouldn't help, you know, if she's standing and your lawyer happens to pass out due to conditions, she's not going to help that person.
Going.
She's going to keep going. She's going to say, now look, judge, while this is going on, you know my case is rock solid. I need this to happen.
But she doesn't like soccer mom, so that's so maybe she doesn't want to take Nicole on as a client.
That she's going to say, first question, what sports do your kids play?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I'm out.
Yeah.
Second question, do they play basketball? If so, maybe I could work with that as long as I'm not playing basketball.
All right. Let me start with, let's stay on the challenge. And this was Jeff describing this this challenge. And it was like something that was so familiar to people when they had to slide the letter tiles across the board.
This first stage is a game you play in your backyard, sliding tiles.
Just like a game you play in your backyard, Mike. Sliding tiles.
Yeah, I mean, you never played Scrabble Gong before?
Yep. Slide. Q.
Double word score! I mean, look, people can be assholes when they play Scrabble. That's just a way to really put a sound effect on it.
Okay. So that one cracked me up. And then there's a couple of Rick Devins quotes from this episode. And Rick Devins had this to say about how much fun he was having.
I'm having a ton of fun wearing these guys out. I feel like a kid or like the fugitive. Either one is just as fun.
Isn't that fun to be the fugitive?
Harrison Ford had the best time running from people who accused him of murdering his wife. He was clearly the most delighted he's been in years.
Yeah.
He got to dive off a dam, Rob. I mean, that's just like cliff diving levels of ecstasy.
I guess so. Is there a scene in this new Fugitive where Rick Devins is standing there with his hands up and he's saying, "I didn't find the idol."
And Lauren's saying, "I don't care. I know you did." I could see Lauren as Tommy Lee Jones.
Right. Oh boy. You know, a murder, run from the police, nonstop fun for the fugitive.
I loved Rick's Bigfoot run as well, where we just see this panning shot of him just making a mad dash across the jungle, and it pans back to Victoria just sort of staring like, I'm not gonna go after him. What the hell is he doing? Is this that live action Sonic the Hedgehog reboot that everyone's talking about?
No, too creepy.
I mean, listen, Rick is as contentious as live-action Sonic the Hedgehog is, and his teeth are just as human.
Yeah. Also, Gavin described Rick in an unusual way at Tribal Council.
He's the master of disguise.
He's the master of disguise?
That's when he pulls off his disguise and reveals it was Dana Carvey all along, Rob. That's yeah. why he's
dun,
so
dun,
contentious.
Dun, dun, dun,
dun. Dana Carvey. Can I ask a question about Gavin off topic
sure,
here?
Sure. I'd rather have a question about Dana Carvey, but go ahead.
I mean, listen, we'll talk about who deserves to be in the Turtle Club after this. But is Gavin the most normal person to ever play Survivor?
Because,
I mean, no offense to Gavin, but look at him. He seems just like
what
a relatively... He seems just like a relatively normal guy, very mild-mannered, whereas it seems everyone else sort of has these quirks and quarks that pop in various ways. Gavin just seems very much a smooth operator, that it doesn't seem like someone would be like, ah, yes, you belong on a reality show. He just seems like a normal person picked out of a lineup, given a festive shirt, and put onto the show. Which, again, no mm-hmm. offense to him. I think he's doing a great job in the game, even if I might disagree with some of his actions. But his personality, at least, is an interesting comparison to everything else around him.
Seems like a pretty normal guy.
Yeah, which, again, you know, you need your Michael Bluth to compare to the other Bluth mischief going on around you. Mm-hmm. It just seems so interesting that, especially nowadays, when I think we really get wacky personalities out of some of these people, that you have just... just good old Gavin. You know, I think even in the first episode, I was reading over my notes, and Eric's like, "What's the wackiest thing about living in the South?" And he's like, "I eat fried pickles." You know, like, that's, I feel like that's Gavin in a nutshell.
Yeah. Here is Rick Devins talking about why this strategy has been so effective for him.
I love making them paranoid because it makes them mentally and emotionally exhausted. It brings me joy.
It's the Marie Kondo strategy for Rick Devins, where he is going around looking for all the clutter and just clearing it out.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, I know that all these idols are calling you, causing you guys pain. You need to release them. I'll take them for
you. They bring him joy.
Even though, ironically enough, I think Rick Devins could be on an episode of Hoarders for his own, you know, mischief. I was not given these TV guides. Someone gave them to me anonymously. They dropped them off in my mailbox.
No, they didn't, Rick. Come on. We both know that you bought them all.
You love Murphy Brown. There's 13 issues of this, Rick. I don't know.
It's canceled. Listen. You know that. That's why you got into news.
I don't know. I don't even know who Candace Bergen is. You know, she looks lovely. Hey, look, Thursday they're in The Wizard of Oz on TMC.
And Lauren, in addition to hating Rick Devins' lies, she also hates something else.
I think that Rick has gone crazy. He disappears out of nowhere. It's like hide and seek, and I always hated hide and seek as a kid.
No.
That seems like a very Aurora type thing.
Yeah, I bet Aurora hates hide and seek too.
Yeah, I would assume she's like, why are you hiding? I suck at this. I can never find people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, half of these contestants, Bloom, are great at hide and seek. You haven't seen them in forever.
Yeah, so I was going to say, in the edit bay, they're great at hide and seek, but that's your job, not necessarily theirs. But I mean, Lauren, for what it's worth, was able to be the first to find an idol, so maybe it's just a late coming set of hide and seek skills.
Yeah. All right, Mike, I want to talk about something that went on the edge of extinction with you this week. And the survivors got a very special reward that we've never seen before on the show.
You have been pushed further than anticipated, and you have withstood the test. This is the letter you wrote to yourself before the game.
Oh my gosh.
I don't feel like that was a happy awe. I feel like that was an aw crap. Really?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So now you have to do some reading. Good thing Aurora wasn't on the edge of extinction yet, because that would have involved looking at words, which she does not care for.
Yeah, what are these? I hate word sequences.
Okay. And Mike, I was just wondering if perhaps you could, instead of rapping for us today, that could you read to us from the letter you wrote yourself before you started podcasting about the edge of extinction?
Oh, okay. This is fun, since I literally do this every week anyway on the B&B, just write down the stupid things I wrote. I will say, before
this is not unlike the B&B.
I will say, before we just get into that, so it's interesting that they did this. This might have come out of nowhere. I'm assuming that, Rob, you did not need to do this during either one of your seasons. I have experience doing this. This was something where at my college in the first week right before or during orientation, we had to write a letter to ourselves. And during the last week of college, we got those letters back and read what we wrote to ourselves. It was interesting because, first off, I do not think it was appropriate to give 17-year-old boys the capacity to write to 21-year-old boys. The brain has certain maturation points that they reach, and it was quite salacious. But what happened was... Well, I mean, it's stupid things like, I hope I could hook up and get real crunk on Blue Wave. And of course, I, you know, might have fulfilled one of those requests, checked one of those things off the bucket
list. On the other hand, was a man whore.
It was not a Blue Wave whore. But I think that one of the things that I did was I thought, all right, I'm going to treat this as an investment opportunity. I'm going to put $20 in this envelope. So 4 years from now, and this is in a savings account, there won't be any interest rates attached. But you know what? I'm going to get $20 in 4 years. That's going to be awesome. Let's say I had a bit too much Blue Wave and other drinks the day before the letters were given out, and I missed getting my letter. So consider that the first $20 I gave to my college.
What is Blue Wave?
Blue Wave is a horrible, horrible vodka. It's a blue raspberry vodka that comes in a plastic handle. That's one of those college things that you're like, well, this comes in bulk. I might as well use this, pour this into some solo cups while we play Risk together, because that's the sort of class of clientele I associated myself with.
Blue Wave and playing Risk.
Yep, those were my weekends, in case anyone had any sort of expectations to the opposite. Yeah, I wonder if it's still... I hope it's not still on the market. Yes, it still is, and it looks just as grody as ever. I would not recommend it. I would rather eat mountains of Survivor pizza than indulge in any Blue Wave.
Okay, yeah. Why Blue Wave? Was it just cheap?
It was cheap, and, you know, you're looking for, like, it's cheap hard alcohol. You know, it's just like the... it's not Seagram's. There's like a cheap type of gin. Basically, when it comes to college, like, if it's plastic, you're good. You know, it's exactly the opposite of the environmental procedures. We're not going green here. If it's plastic, it'll get you in the state that you want to. Or who has taste buds when you're in your formative years?
Okay, Blue Wave Vodka. This podcast is sponsored by Blue Wave Vodka.
Yes, we still exist.
The smooth, mixable taste that adds to any party. Also by Cheers Health.
Okay. Exactly. All right. So I'm writing another letter to myself. I feel like we've gone onto a blue wave at this point, away from the main island. So I'm writing a letter to myself before covering Edge of Extinction.
Yes. Okay. Could you read to us from that letter, Mike?
Mike, wow! I can't believe it. You made it all the way to Edge of Extinction. First, I hope your baby's doing well and that none of your garments were shown to him and dropped on the floor. Boy, would that be embarrassing. At any rate, Edge of Extinction is a weird Survivor season, but I hope you treat it with the same kid-colored gloves. Wait, that's not a phrase. Kid gloves? kid-colored gloves, sure. Kid-colored gloves.
Were there a lot of typos in this letter?
Yeah, I...
Crossed a lot of things out?
You know, stream of consciousness, it was written with one of the tribal council pens, so I couldn't really go out and cross a lot of stuff out. I didn't want to pull in Aubrey, since I knew that she would be cast. I hope that the returnees do not monopolize a lot of airtime, and if they do, that whatever they do, they don't continually target each other. I hope we get to see such bombastic characters as Eric, Gavin, Chris Underwood, and Julia become the Mount Rushmore of Survivor players on our screen. I cannot wait to see every chicken slaughtered on this island. The Edge of Extinction is going to be a very interesting place where people pull psychological warfare on each other. There will be no hugging, not a map to be found, as everyone decides to wage mental warfare on each other. I'm most looking forward to warm Virginian mother Reem Daly, who has certainly nothing bad to say about her conditions or her fellow competitors, just a beacon of etiquette and niceties. As for the war dog, his hats will be big and plenty, much like his love. At any rate, Mike, I feel like I've gone a bit too specific with his predictions, as I am wont to do. So let me leave you with one final thought. Come on, Survivor Devil. Come on, Survivor Devil, come on. P.S. I owe you $20.
Yeah. Mike, did you write yourself any thoughts about the world of pop culture when you wrote this note to yourself back in January? Oh, that was good. That's a good idea.
I can't wait. I hope that all celebrities are in the audience, like Constance Wu, R. Kelly, and the Fire Festival creators. All rooting on the contestants' successes.
Uh, Oh, wow. What a great letter.
I'm sure the final season of Game of Thrones is received positively by absolutely everybody. The season is overflowing with light, and their cup runneth over with story. And for God's sake, somebody better pet Ghost.
All right. Wow. Mike, great job with that letter, and you should laminate that.
I guess so, because I don't think we've ever seen something that was more wrong in anybody's life. So I guess I'll post that up. Maybe I'll hoist it up like a flag just waving in the wind. Yeah, what did you think about this segment? It is interesting in so many ways.
Yes. By the way, is Constance Wu the Reem Daily of Fresh Off the Boat?
Dude, I didn't even want to get renewed.
Dude, you know what? F this.
I'm being a crazy rich Asian and saying how much I didn't need to come back onto this cockababy show.
You know what? Screw this show.
But Eddie Huang, please get out of the sun. Don't get too tan, okay? The melanoma is something that's really prevalent nowadays, but... But otherwise, F you, lick my butt.
Lick my butt. Okay. So the letter to self was odd. Here's Reem's letter. Let's listen to Reem's letter.
I hope this brings me a new patience. I hope to be more self-sufficient and independent. I'm not needy, but I can always be better. Weird.
Was that really that on the nose?
I mean, it was very off the nose, that first statement. I think it was, like, on somebody else's nose. That's how far off the nose it was.
I mean, did this really sound like it applied to Reem?
I hope this brings me a new patience. I hope to be more self-sufficient and independent. I'm not needy, but I can always be better.
I mean, it seems ironic that Reem does not seem to have learned patience from the Edge of Extinction.
Maybe she meant, I hope I'll become a new patient at a therapist after this.
Yeah. All right, let's hear what else she had to say.
Weird. I can't believe that. I was so caught up on this. You were voted out first. You're a loser. But it took me so long to finally be proud of myself and realize, wow, I am a survivor.
Wow. It took Reem 35 days of being on the show
to realize that she was on Survivor.
Dude, everything makes so much more sense now.
To be fair, it took Keith Nail almost 78 days to realize he was on Survivor, so...
Some of the other letters I thought were interesting. What did you think of Chris's letter? That Chris learned something when he went out on the rock by himself to read his letter.
Having the Edge of Extinction, the introspective... the personal quest to find out who I am, how much I've grown and how much I've changed.
Yes, Chris has grown and changed.
P.S. Nice peen, bro.
That's it. Good night, everybody. Thank you. Thank you for listening.
That's the hashtag. Why was Chris out on a rock in the middle of the ocean? Did he draw the short straw when it came to picking these locations? That has to be the most uncomfortable. Like, mermaids only find themselves out there on rocks in during
merman.
Certain circumstances. Or he was the merman, I suppose. He spent enough time at the water, God willing. But, like, that has to be so uncomfortable on both his patootie and, you know, his back as well.
Okay. All right. What do you think of this was Lauren at the tribal council also from this week. She talked about what it's like to go up against Rick Devins when he's threatening to play an idol.
It's just like the fear factor of it.
was she shouting out fear factor?
I mean, I think she really wants to get a spot on. She's calling Ludacris out. She knows how much of a big fan he is to bring her on, I guess, with Kelly to encounter the greatest fears of Rick Devins has too many idols. How are you going to face that fear?
Yeah. Remember when Ludacris was calling out Beast Mode Cowboy for being a survivor and not on Big Brother 16 with Cody and Zach Rantz?
Remember when Caleb's brother was on there for no particular reason? Nobody said a word about it.
Yeah. And Abby Maria was with Sierra Dawn Thomas.
Yeah. And maybe that's how Sierra worked up the courage. Like, I could crawl through a tunnel full of worms. I can marry Joe Anglim.
Yeah.
Did you get the clip for Joe's letter, by the way? Because I think I misheard something.
I don't have the clip for Joe Anglim's letter, but I do have the clip of Beast Mode Cowboy being on Fear Factor.
Oh, perfect. It's the exact same thing. So,
Caleb and Blake.
Yo.
Caleb, tell me about your experience on Survivor.
I overextended myself. I pushed myself too hard. I had a heat stroke and I had to be life flighted out on day 9.
Damn, that's serious business.
Now that's a fear factor.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe I don't know, some of these fear factor things I'm assuming you can do in your backyard, right? The old worm eating.
Sure. Yeah, we remember.
On Survivor, they say the tribe has spoken. Today, fear has definitely taken over.
And I think Ludacris snuffed our torches.
Yes, he did.
Imagine Ludacris as host. Now we're doing just a big old key party of TV hosts. Reem is now hosting Jeopardy. Ludacris is now hosting Survivor. And the world has gone topsy-turvy.
Okay. What would you have to say about Joe's letter?
So Joe says, be confident, be either, he says, be sneaky or be stinky. And I
no,
can't tell.
Be sneaky. He said be sneaky.
It kind of sounds like he said be stinky.
We can go to the tape if you want to use
yes,
one of your challenges.
Yes, I think
challenges.
We need to get this. I'm throwing down the flag. I guess I'm raising the mast.
Everybody gets
say.
One podcast challenge when they appear on the podcast. So Mike is challenging my assertion that Joe Anglim said be sneaky as one of his Joe Anglim rules. But Mike thinks that Joe wrote in a letter to himself, be stinky, as in embrace what it's going to be like to be a survivor.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, he wants to fully immerse himself in the experience, not come off as too much of a pristine returning player.
You're a fighter. You've already won. I would have never realized this without this journey.
Confident, be sneaky, be the ultimate survivor that you are.
Yeah, I think you're alone on the edge of extinction on this one, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed a little laugh in his voice. Maybe it's because he did write be stinky and he's just laughing to himself about writing it. Did you notice this was not an audio thing, but did you notice what the war dog did in his letter?
What did he wrote? I am the war dog.
He did start off with the word war dog, so yes, he's still referring to himself in the third person unless the survivor devil inherited his writing skills as well as his social media skills.
Mm-hmm.
But war dog, so the first question, I guess, of the survey was, why am I here? He crossed off the question, and to my best knowledge, from what I could discern in the screenshot, wrote like, the war dog makes up his own rules, so this is I'm going to make up my own questions, and I'm going to answer them for me. I'm going to pull a Josh Wiggler here.
He's going off the menu, off the advantage menu.
Exactly. And I'm pretty sure he just wrote 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
All right. Let's take some more questions here with the great Mike Bloom. And this is one I'm not really sure I got what the question was here, but let me play it for you. And you tell me if you can follow what not dad Mike is talking about. Here is Mike.
Hey, Dad Rob and Dad Mike, non-Dad Mike here, wondering if you guys can go through all the players that are still in the game and rank who you think would be best for each one of their games to be coming back from the edge of extinction. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. All right. So he wants to know, for each person who could be the Edge of Extinction person to come back? I'm not sure why the Peppa Pig music was included.
Do we need to refer to each of these players in a chipper British accent as if we are narrating them?
All right. Daddy, who is better for Gavin? Okay.
Now,
Gavin,
David Wright has quite the DVD collection. Should he add a Survivor title to the mantle?
You're not making your baby watch TV yet, are you?
I mean, he's watching the shows that we watch. Okay. I mean, he's sort of a captive. He can't exactly walk away at this point from the stuff we're watching. So he's enjoying the reality TV, the Paradise Hotel premiere that we watch, some typical MTV fare. So yeah, we're only raising him on the highest quality champagne television.
Okay. All right. Real quick, Gavin, who would be his number one person to come back?
Ooh, I would say... Who would come back and work with...
Kelly Wentworth, I think.
Yeah, Kelly Wentworth loves Gavin. She vocalized it. Gavin, you would say on paper, Gavin's best friend. Those are his dino friend, Eric, but he had a hand in voting him out as well as Ron.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be thrilled to see Eric come back. So I think Kelly Wentworth would be his number one person to come back. Same for Lauren.
Oh, yep. I would say definitively so. I could say maybe, considering who she was, she hasn't really been working with anybody else. It seems like she's really just become tight with, like, the Gavin Auroras and Victoria. So if any of them were on EOE, she would have been good with them. But I commend Lauren so much for making so many inroads when her number one ally was gone with all these new players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. What about then for, let's see, I guess Julie, who would be her best person?
Ron. I mean, dude was Arsenio hauling it up when Rick said he was going to use the idol on her. So I think suffice it to say, he is taking her out of the trash can she's standing in right now.
These are my friends.
Okay.
Clever girl.
Okay. For Rick Devins, it's David Wright.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess you could say the interesting thing, though, about Rick Devins is that since he's voted so incorrectly, he could really bring anybody in as an ally. You could put David in there. You could put Wardog in there, too, since he voted with Wardog on that one. I think those are the top two guys. If they don't have hair, they're Rick Devins' best bet.
If David Wright comes back into the game, he's going to work with Devins no matter what, right? That's sort of like an interesting scenario of... everybody on the Edge of Extinction is pretty pro Rick Devins based on the jury, but I don't get the sense that people are dying to work with him, but that somebody might come back and be, you know, in Rick Devins' corner and really, you know, change up the balance of power.
So here's a question that I have about it. Do you think the person who returns from Edge of Extinction thinks they can legitimately win the game?
Yes.
You think so? Even though they're coming into the game so late?
They're hanging out with the jury all day.
I guess so, but if that's the point...
They could have a pact of, hey, whoever gets back in the game is going to win.
The interesting thing about that, then, is as much as everyone is really, you know, acting like Showtime at the Apollo when Rick Devins comes out and does his song and dance, what they're not going to... To your point, they're not going to want to work with him because they say...
But David Wright definitely would.
David Wright definitely would, but I do feel like everyone else would say, oh, wait... Yeah, they're right. Rick is a huge threat to win. I need to get rid of him. So as much game as Rick was talking about how, just wait, you wait until the person comes in from the Edge of Extinction, this could be yet another piece of fake news spoken by Rick Devins, the newscaster.
How dare you imply that Rick has a fake newscast?
Dun, 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 dun.
Will Rick... do in a final tribal council, will he do his trademark news anchor sound?
Dun, 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 dun.
I feel like only if it's akin to me to the Big Brother 7 finale where Dr. Will calls Boogie on the Chilltown line during the jury questioning. I feel like only if he's prompted to do it, and he's done it in public. There was a secret scene, I think, back in episode 3, where he does a newscast in honor of Kelly's birthday. So I feel like it's common knowledge, even though it's become more private, more privatized, corporatized as of late. So I feel like maybe if David's on the jury and prompts him with, like, I want you to answer this question, but I want you to answer it in the form of a news briefing, if that's how ridiculous this 13-person final tribal council is going to go, then we're going to hear it come in.
Okay. Let's play this question. This comes to us from Billy.
Does Victoria have a horse in the race
Does Victoria have a friend? I don't know who Victoria's. Julia? I don't know.
I mean,
to her credit, like, most of her friends are still there.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Julie has just been the most malleable. She is the slime. So maybe that's why you've been turned off to selecting her. I would say that maybe Ron, you know, it seems like she had a close relationship with Ron, even though he tried to throw her under the bus during that chaotic tribal council. I believe she voted against Rick along with Ron and Julie. So
she would want Ron to come back.
Yeah, so maybe I could see that. So
Victoria, who would her person be?
Victoria is, I know I'm bringing up a trigger word here for you. Victoria is sort of like the slime here.
Uh-oh.
She really is flowing from alliance to alliance, so it's really tough to nail down, you know, who she would want back, especially because she has really hopped from rock to rock, like Eric in the middle of the ocean reading his letter.
Chris.
Now I'm confusing these guys. I would say Ron would probably be the best bet. You know, they seem like they have a friendly relationship, except for the time that Ron tried to throw her under the bus in front of her face. But they have stuff stemming back all the way from when they were throwing Joe under the bus right in front of Joe. And she did stick with the plan and voted, you know, along with Ron against Rick when he idled out Ron. So I guess that's the best thing I could think of right now.
Okay. All right. Let's go to another voicemail. And this is from one of our listeners, Billy, who has a question for Mike about Rick Devins.
Hey, Rob and Mike. This is Billy in Sioux City, Iowa. And I just wanted to know if Rick Devins is a millennial. Thanks a lot, Mike. Congratulations. Bye.
Mike, is Rick Devins a millennial?
Well, he does ruin everything, so I guess so. I think we're gonna have to go, our second good night, folks. I think we're gonna have to end the podcast right there.
Dun 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 dun.
Yeah, the podcast is dun 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 now. Where did this question come from? What does this have to do with anything?
I don't know. Rick Devins is 33 years old.
Okay. Is he a millennial? I suppose by the pure, I guess it goes back to millennials versus Gen X of like attitude versus age being just a number. Because I guess he is, how old was Mari Takahashi? I feel like she was around that range, right? She sort of is on the teetering the Takahashi Ken line. Who's a millennial and who's a Gen X? And I guess, you know, he's doing crazy challenges like popping out and scaring people for the views and the lols of it all. He has his own Etsy shop selling crazy trinkets and idols.
That's Julie.
That's true, but Rick's doing it on island, at least. He's being entrepreneurial and starting his own on-island venture. Like millennials, he's very woke in that he literally wakes up in the middle of the night to find idols in trees. He does complain about the situation that he's in, which he feels like other people might have screwed him into, which millennials are wont to do as well by the other generations.
Right.
He does have a lot of social debt, much like millennials have a lot of student debt. So the more we talk about this, the more I could see Rick Devins as the biggest millennial since season 33 proper.
Mari Takahashi was 31 in Millennials versus Gen X, and that was now 2.5 years ago. So I think that would make her the same age as Rick Devins.
Okay, so I guess from an age perspective, he's right there. He's on the edge of distinction when it comes to an age gap. The interesting thing, though, is Rick does not look 33, and that means no insult to him. And he's very happily married with children. But I don't know. I don't exactly know what a 33-year-old looks like. But Rob, can you? I don't know if you dispute this, if this is another sneaky, stinky thing, but he does not look like a 33-year-old millennial to me.
Well, I think this maybe he carries himself as a mature news anchor, that he is seemingly older.
That's true. If you considering the news climate we live in today, if you have certain pieces go across your desk every single day, certain lines develop across your face, no matter how young you are.
The news will age you. Okay. All right. Mike, let's see. Some other questions that we have. This is one from Curtis on Twitter, and wanted to hear Curtis's, now that the season is wrapping up, would Mike consider letting Reem babysit his new son, Asher?
I mean, of all the people,
do not pull that mom card with me. I am not gonna mom a bunch of babies.
Dude! what are you talking about over there, man? I'm trying to put together this furniture for you, dude. Changing tables don't do themselves, bro.
I'm into this long distance reaming now.
Yeah.
It's like a sport. This is what you can do in your backyard, Jeff.
Yeah. So,
Absolutely. You know what? I'll co-opt the question. Yeah, would you let Reem babysit your children? Absolutely. She'll give
them...
Who would
be the best babysitter? Best babysitter from this season?
Well, Rick's going to play... Well, Lauren will not play hide and seek with them, yes, so I feel like she's off.
Take her off the table. Ron is an educator.
Ron is an educator, but at the
same
time... You
will take your kids out of the garbage can.
Yes, exactly. But also, I fear if I live in some place, if I live on, like, Aurora Lane, that might trigger him and have me treated differently. And I don't know if I want my kids to be, I don't know, inflicted by any sort of dance fever by the end of it all.
Aurora hates word puzzles. That would not be good for teaching kids.
Yes, we are very jumble friendly here in the Bloom household. We just have it pasted up all over the walls. Let's see. Victoria? I feel like Victoria would...
I don't trust her. She said nobody should trust her.
Yeah, we don't... And you said don't let slime into the household, so I think we should promptly cut her off at the gate.
So, Victoria, no way. I think that she's like, you know, she acts nice, and then when I leave, she throws a party in my house.
Wendy would open the door and let my dog out of the house, so I think she's off the table. Keith would be stuck between peanut butter or jelly in terms of what to make him for a snack.
And let's see. War Dog, no way.
I mean, War Dog could at least give him a hat when it gets cold outside.
Yeah.
But I feel like he'd be too out of control. Aubrey would just put too many weird ideas in my kids' heads and make it think it's Halloween.
Yes. Julie can make toys.
Julie can make toys, but Julie can also get very flighty and just all of a sudden say she's jumping ship. Yeah, exactly. And I don't know, crawl into my fire escape and just walk out of my apartment.
Okay. All right. Rick could play dress up with the kids.
He's the master of disguise.
So
Rick could play dress up, but I don't want to get Rick. I don't want Rick to psychologically intimidate my children because I know that gives him power.
Yeah, bring some joy.
Yeah, I don't want to make my child seem like the fugitive.
Okay. All right. No way Chris Underwood is going to be the Manny.
No. Listen, I've had problems with my own pants staying up. I don't want another factor invited into that household.
Okay. All right.
So I guess we've settled on Reem. I feel like I could put some Kelly Wentworth in there as well. You know what? David would be good, too. I'd have him bring over his DVDs, and I feel like... even though I think he'd also be want to cover his ears upon any loud noise the child produces.
I think Joe Anglin might be the best. He's going to be able to take them outside, do arts and crafts, he'll paint the flag. You know, he seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, that's true.
He's never going to do anything sneaky, what he tells himself.
But he won't give them a bath because he wants them to be stinky.
Yeah. Okay. Mike, I think this might be last question for you. Swaggy J wants to know, interested to hear from Asher's perspective, what are his thoughts on the season so far? Not ideal coming into the season with only three episodes left, but I'm sure that he can share some unique insight.
This is really the ultimate casuals corner, right? You bring someone literally into the world, let alone the world of Survivor, with one episode left, and you get a feeling as to what they might be doing. I mean, it looks like from the reactions I've been garnering, Rick Devens, he's real glassy-eyed towards... Lauren, very glassy-eyed. I think he peed just a little bit when Julie was there. I believe he opened his mouth when he saw Gavin. A little bit of spittle came out when Ron was shown fist-pumping, though that might have just been due to the circumstances of us feeding him. I will say maybe he was a bit triggered. He did cry a little bit when Jeff was salaciously talking about the spa reward and everyone was pigging out, so... I think I have created a child that would definitely sit out a challenge for a shot at food.
Okay, there you go. Mike, anything else that you want to say about the Survivor Edge of Extinction as we head towards the finale?
All right, Rob, let's put in, we made a couple of bets over the course of this podcast. Let's plant our flag and promptly raise it here. Who out of the what, 11 people at the beginning of next episode, who in your opinion is coming back from the edge of extinction? Because I have a grand unifying theory about this that I'm sure to be wrong about.
Okay, I think it's going to be Aurora.
Okay, so you just think it's going to be the Aurora revolving door?
Yes.
I could see that. Here's my thing. This letter segment was super weird, right? Still very strange that we have, I guess, Willard Smith, the survivor mailman, stopped by to drop off some letters for everybody. But I think if you're looking at the Edge of Extinction from an emotional arc perspective, it closed things out in a variety of ways for a lot of contestants. My big theory is that anyone who read their letter on the Edge of Extinction this past episode is not going to come back.
Oh!
I think that represents for them...
Dude.
I'm sorry, I know you built out a lot of patience out there, Reem, but you're going to have to step about a mile further and ream me out, because unfortunately, I think your game might officially be done next episode.
Okay, so that was closure in your mind, if they read the letter.
Yeah, because I think that, and that's what people had sort of been talking about with other characters as well, because this really felt like a lot of people sort of reckoning back to what they wrote, you know, when they came in and saying, okay, I might have not have gotten $1 million. I might not have even given myself $20 out of this experience. But you know what? This is sort of what I've emotionally reconciled, and I don't need to win the game. I learned so much about myself. We saw that with people like Julia, with Chris, with Eric as well, with David. Speaking of weddings, David might, I don't know, do something interesting with his girlfriend Leah, considering he says he wants to treat his relationship more maturely. So that makes me feel like that leaves other people sort of with an ellipses at the end of their story that need to be completed, whether it's an in and out the door in the finale or not. And so who's left from that? So we have what? We have War Dog. We have Kelly Wentworth.
Ron.
We have Ron, and we have Aurora obviously coming back. I'm going to put my pin on Miss Kelly Wentworth. I think she's coming back.
Sneaky, sneaky.
Sneaky, stinky it is. Yes.
Does she come back and win?
I don't think so. But I believe that, I don't know, it just feels so weird that so much time was disproportionately focused on these returnees to have none of them in the finale would be absolutely bonkers. Granted, this is an absolutely bonkers season, but I just feel like it would hew closely to the themes of this season to have Kelly on there, even if it's a short flash in the pan thing. You know, she knows about Lauren's idol. She can work with her for it. Maybe it'll lead to her just going right back out the door and into the jury. But I feel like, as I spoke about before, of all the returnees, I think she also has the biggest unfinished potential. She was the one who got blindsided with an idol in her pocket. So that's going to be my big, bold prediction here. I think we see Kelly Wentworth make her way back into the game, and I think we see a final three of Lauren, Julie, and Ricky Tiki Tembo, No Sha Rembo, Chari Parapucci, Pip Perry Pembo as our winner of Survivor Edge of Extinction.
Okay, there you go. All right. Mike, well done. I really appreciate you making so much time for us today, and I got a lot going on with the new baby.
I mean, the pleasure was all mine, Rob. I absolutely love to take little detours. You know, from parenthood has been crazy so far, and it has been wonderful and so eventful, even in the week that has passed. I cannot even imagine what is to come, but you know, I will always relish the time to come on and talk with you. We're really writing audio letters to each other in real time to a bunch of people who are BCC'd. So I wanted to thank you, Rob, for being my perennial pen pal for so many years.
Yes, and I hope everybody enjoyed all of our audio letters, of course. Mike,
but hopefully Aurora doesn't think they're too jumbled up that she'll hate them.
Mike will be getting back to his regular audio lettering coming up soon. Mike, will you have time to get together for a Brant Steele this summer?
Oh, absolutely. I actually have a proposal for you here in honor of your last prolific feedback show guest. Rob, how you feeling about Survivor Zaddy Island?
Zaddy Island. Okay, go on.
So we're thinking, let's take the original crop of 12. Maybe we throw some shortlisters in there, contenders for the 2020 calendar, depending on when that release drops. But let's see who the best Zaddy of them all could be.
Well, let's put it into the mix. Let's put it into the mix. I don't know if I want to do an all-men Survivor and Lauren Rimmer edition of the Brant Steele.
Yeah, I could see that. Let's put it in the war dog hat, and we'll see what the Survivor Devil picks out.
And comes up. We still have Stans versus Ops coming up on the Robin Akiva Nita podcast wheel, so be on the lookout for that as well.
Oh, and of course, we have, what did we come up with on Amazing Race? Sprains versus Prawn versus Prudies?
Yes. Yes, maybe an Amazing Race, Brant Steele, could be the way to go also. Maybe we should cast another Survivor versus Big Brother, or we'll say, I've never done a Big Brother Brant Steele also. That's another one potentially on the bucket list.
Yeah, we'll see if the BBBS is BS or not. But I would love to do that to simulate more Survivor seasons. There will be real Survivor seasons going on as well, as Rob says. Shannon Gates and I, we are really revving down and revving back up like a wayward Vietnamese motorbike, the Survivor coverage.
Careful.
Shannon Gates, I know, real organ cycles or donor cycles, if they were. So Shannon Gates and I will be doing weekly coverage of Survivor South Africa, which should be premiering the day after Edge of Extinction ends. So if you guys are saying I want more Survivor, or you know, I'm so pumped after that recent ending, or I'm so down on that recent ending, there's more Survivor for you to check out over the summer. And I actually believe the premiere should be available on YouTube for free. That might be some Rick Devin's fake news. Don't hold me to that. You can check out Shannon's cast breakdown with Liana Boris.
On the street is that no matter what, we've got those links in the Robin's Podcast patron group.
Absolutely. The Island of
Allegedly.
Secrets is not,
that's what I'm hearing.
Is not, yeah, not so secretive with the links to Island of Secrets, but Shannon and I will be doing that. I'm really looking forward to talking more Survivor as the season progresses. We'll also be wrapping up the RHAP B&B as well. I'll make my return there with your friend and mine, Eric Stein, will be making a return appearance.
He was so great on the finale podcast for David versus Goliath.
Yeah, and he was great with you a few weeks ago as well, so I'll be super excited to get his reception behind not only how the season finished, but I guess the online reaction as well, which again has really changed, much like the season has over the course of the past few weeks, as I'm sure we'll also preview what the Survivor Devil has in the works. I'll also be back covering RuPaul's Drag Race, which has had its own barrel of shenanigans that Sierra Dawn Thomas is riding up Donkey Kong style. I'll be doing that with Brent and Liana. And of course, Rob, you and myself and Jessica Lise have been fortuitously covering this season of The Amazing Race, which has been so much fun. We're going to be about like halfway through the season when we come back in a couple weeks. So lots of irons in the fire, but I'm feeling nice and toasty.
All right. Great stuff. And we're so thankful to everybody who made it this far into the podcast. Mike, did we have that hashtag ready to go?
You mean a nice peen, bro?
Nope. Nope.
All right. That'll be the seat.
Yeah, hold on,
the...
hold on. Let's let me bring in Kelly Wentworth.
Oh hell no!
All right, Lindell, that one's just for you. Okay, that's in honor of your clean voicemail. All right, well, we got a couple of few here. I've got a Scrabble gong. I've got a eye teeth roll. I've got a sneaky stinky.
Let's see. Okay, give me the Scrabble gong. I'll go.
Scrabble gong. I think could be an interesting. There we go. Scrabble gong is not getting the gong from the Gong Show, meaning it is good and it is going through.
Okay, of course. Thanks to the patrons of Robin's Podcast, make all of this nonsense this week possible, and the Mike Bloom finale preview lived up to the billing. Be sure to follow. Well, we'll be following the draft live in the Rob's Podcast patron Facebook group. Rob has a website.com/patron for everything that we're doing over there, our secret patron only podcast feed and everything all summer long. Rob has a website.com/patron.
And also make sure you have your dialed into the Game of Thrones episode 5, as well as the Big Bang Theory finale as our tiebreaker.
Yes. Yes. All right. So Mike, thank you so much. Follow a Mike Bloom type on Twitter. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.